thank everybody for coming here today. I know we have a lot of folks from out of town, and we have a lot of people want to testify, so I apologize for the late start. I wanted to just say a few introductory comments. For those of you who were outside for the press conference, you may have heard this has been an issue that I've been working on for several years. The Oregonian headline was a little depressing, but I was like, well, three times, and maybe that's a charm. So I am very excited to have so many knowledgeable people here today who can share information about the situation on computer recycling in Oregon and what's happening in other parts of the country. We have a lot of experts that are going to come up today. The reason we don't have, we have three different bills that address this issue that are in the House and Senate side. The reason this is informational is because several of those bills weren't actually ready yet. As you know, Legislative Council is overworked and understaffed, and they're trying to do the best they can, but we decided that we would move forward with an informational hearing on this, and we'll talk a little bit more about what comes next at the end of the session. So with that, I would like to bring up, we have three legislators here that would like to share their comments about e-waste, electronic recycling, and I'm really pleased and honored to have them all here, and I really appreciate it. So I would like to call up Senator Frank Morse, Representative Scott Bruhn, and Representative Brian Klem. And I know you all have committees, so I appreciate you coming here and skipping out for a few minutes. And we'll have the senator go first. Senator.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Frank Morris, State Senator, representing District 8, the Albany-Corvallis area. I very much appreciate the opportunity to appear today, Madam Chair, and committee members. I would like to preface my comments with a personal, a personal reflection about the why of electronic recycling bill. For me, it's a matter of stewardship. As legislators, we're entrusted with the responsibility to manage our resources, not only for the present, but for the future. And with respect to what we consume, we are not particularly wise stewards. And this is really a stewardship issue, I believe. With respect to electronic waste, we have failed to manage this resource, especially wisely. We've had attempts in the past. This is the session, and this is the time to find a workable bill. I very much support the work, Chair, Madam Chair, and your committee to find solutions, and I look forward to being involved in helping craft a solution that we can move through the Assembly. I would like to just reflect on what I believe to be basic principles that we should address in these discussions. Number one, the bill should be inclusive. It should include all manufacturers of what we call, and this is a terminology that may survive in the language, it may not, but it seems to fit, would be covered electronic devices, or CEDs, which includes computers, monitors, televisions, and portable computers. And I believe it's important to include in the bill some provision for what we would call orphan waste. Number two, provide a framework that is fair, flexible, convenient, and efficient. Number three, allocate responsibility among manufacturers based on, again, this is language in the Senate bill, it's a return share in weight of CEDs. For manufacturers who sell their products in Oregon, they must accept a big share of the responsibility for recycling, which means providing free, convenient, and environmentally sound recycling services throughout the state. Number four, manufacturers need to have the flexibility to either choose to offer their own program or participate in a common program. In the event they choose not to play, that there would be a pay provision for their fair share in a state-managed program. Number five, retailers must ensure that products they sell meet the legislation's requirements, including their own branded products. Number six, education of the public is a shared responsibility of both local and state government. Seven, disposing of computer monitors, televisions, and portable computers must be literally as easy as buying them. Number eight, promote the use of local collectors and processors of CEDs. 9, encourage reuse of valuable components, as they may be, in the recycled waste. Number 10, provide for compensation for collectors, which would provide incentives for local governments, haulers, retailers, and charities to conduct collection services. Number 11, the program must be self-liquidating and place no increased costs to state and local governments, save for the education and promotion component. Again, Madam Chair, members, I look forward to working with you, and let's find a bill that really does work for the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Senator. Appreciate your comments, and we look forward to working with you. Okay, Representative Broome.
Thank you, Madam Chair of Committee. I'm Scott Bruin. I represent House District 37, which is primarily Tualatin and West Lynn. I thank you very much for the opportunity to say a few words on behalf of this concept today. I wanted to say a couple of words to the Chair. First is a congratulations. You had front page Oregonian coverage before you even had your press conference, so I can only imagine what's going to happen tomorrow. Maybe a blimp fueled by biofuels will be
That's a great idea. I hadn't thought of that. Let me write that down.
I also want to, Madam Chair, I want to thank you and everybody else who's worked so, as was well documented in the Oregonian this morning, who's worked so tirelessly on this issue for so many years. So I think your, as I mentioned earlier, your time has come. So my hat is off to you. You know, to me, this bill is about just a couple points. This bill is about personal responsibility, as I spoke to outside. It's about saying that, you know, I use the analogy that we all know in our heart and our mind that we don't take an old car that we've been, you know, holding on to for 25 years, and when we're done with it, we just don't take it out to an abandoned dirt road somewhere and leave it there, let somebody else take care of it. Same concept goes for consumer electronics, TVs, cell phones, everything else. The problem is we just don't have we all know that, but we don't have a good logistical way to sort of manage that right now. And so the concept that this committee is working on to put together to take care of that, I think, is to be applauded. Just a few points I want to make regarding what this does potentially for efficiencies in small businesses, especially in the rural parts of the state. A few points, and I think we know this, but I think they bear repeating, is the best way to recycle is to keep things local. This saves energy by not having to transport materials across the country or ship them overseas. It seeds local markets and lets our local manufacturers use recycled materials, creating a more sustainable economy. Another point is that we want to support local and small businesses, especially in the rural parts of the state. The solution that you're working should favor local recyclers, and we want to create a local sustainable economy and foster the strong recycling ethic that Oregonians appreciate. All Oregonians deserve access to free, convenient recycling services. And a recent DEQ study, as you may have seen, showed that there is reasonably good coverage in the Willamette area, where I'm from, for sure, and a lot of us are from. But we don't have those. We're not well covered, if you will. We don't have good access to services when we get outside the Willamette Valley. And so this program, this proposal, and one of the reasons I'm so heartily in favor of the idea, is that it is good for small business. It will create jobs. It will help both consumers and businesses, frankly, in the rural parts of the state. It's good for haulers, retailers, and charities, as the Senator mentioned, who conduct these collection services. So that's just one of the many, or just a few of the many, many reasons, good reasons, why we need to go forward with this concept. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Broome. Appreciate you being here. And Representative Clement, then I know you, I think several of you have committee, so if you could stay for questions, but if not, we can hold on until the public hearing.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Brian Clem. I represent portions of Salem here in unincorporated Marion County. I think the reason I got asked to get involved with this is I fix computers for a living. Since farming only pays so well, I had to do something else. So that's what I do for a living. And, you know, the way this plays out right now, or I'll go out to somebody's house and they'll have me swap out a part, and they'll say, what do we do with this thing? Or we got one in the garage. Do you know what to do with this? And they have a free site at Marion County, but a lot of folks, you know, don't necessarily know about that. They think you'd have to maybe pay, or they don't know that it's a separate thing that really shouldn't be in the landfill. So a lot of the computer guys will just take them, and I don't charge them anything, then it ends up in what I call the dungeon, which is the now starting to become more than just the bottom floor of my house. And for the press conference, I was able last night when we got out of the Measure 37 committee, I spent 2 hours in the dungeon and brought a car full down, so I got rid of a chunk. But this is what happens. You got, you know, 20 to 30-year-old guys with dungeons all over the state. It's not good.
I think there might be some women, too.
Yeah, well, they're, yeah, playing some video games. And it would be the right economic efficiency model to have somebody else involved, because in my business, taking the time to go out to the landfill to where in Marion County we have it, you know, as Representative Bruin said, not everybody even has that option. But even in Marion County, taking the time to take a big car full out on behalf of my customers, you know, I should be fixing computers. That's what I know how to do. I'm not a trucker. I'm not a hauler. And it's the right economic model to have me using my education and skills on the computers and have someone else who's got all the infrastructure doing the rest of it and making a business off of it. It is a good local business model. The other piece is, you know, the principles that Senator Morse talked about to me seem to all make sense, but I just think about if I'm going into Best Buy to buy a new gadget, it'd be nice if there was a bin right there where I could put my old one while I'm walking in to buy my new one. You know, that's the kind of concept that it's real easy to do. It's as easy to walk in the store and buy one as it is to get rid of your old one. And the life cycle of these new gadgets is such that I don't think the legislature can really keep pace just by locking in statute that these three things are going to be covered and that's it. Because if you put MP3 device, well then, you know, iTunes came out with MP4. So you can't really, in statute, I don't think, solve this forever. You have to have some way to expand the list of things covered built into the bill, but it can be dealt with by a commission or some other process, because technology just is not, you know, it's not an every 2 year thing, it's about an every 2 minute thing. And the next Vista that comes out in software has an accompanying a bunch of hardware that may make all the current technology obsolete. And I don't think it's a good use of our time to come back in every 2 years and try and update the list. Just set some parameters and then let the program work. You know, I'd be happy to answer any questions from my personal experience, but a lot of times what we're talking about here, it'll be a little old lady and she's doing email with her grandkids and somebody bought her a new one for Christmas because they're getting frustrated when they come to visit her and the computer's so slow. So she'll say, "What do I do with this old thing?" And some computer guy or the kid will take it, and then it ends up in the dungeon. And I'm afraid what happens is eventually it gets thrown into the trash can on garbage day. And that's not good. Not good at all. And so I think a program that allows people to be able to know what to do with their old one, because a lot of these folks, they're elderly. They can't carry a giant monitor even to their car to take out to Marion County. So we have to have some way to deal with this, because it's a lot of seniors struggling to figure out how to get rid of some of the stuff. It's from what I found personal experience.
Great. Thank you so much, Representative Clem. Do you have a minute for questions? If anybody here has any questions? Okay, I guess you're going to get off easy. Thank you so much. Appreciate it, and we look forward to working with all of you as we move forward with this legislation. Thank you. Next, I'm going to call up Metro Councilor Catherine Harrington, because I know she has to leave for another meeting, and then also Jack McGowan, who was generous enough to be here for the press conference and has also another meeting. So we're going to ask both of them to come up and state their name for the record. Okay. And also, is there a county commissioner that wanted to testify? No. Okay, they weren't able to make it. Okay.
Hello, Chair Dingfelder, representatives. I'm Catherine Harrington. I serve on the Metro Council representing District 4 out in Washington County, where a bulk of our high-tech industry is located in my district. So I'm sure many of you are familiar with Metro, our regional government. It serves portions of three counties, Washington County, Multnomah County, and Clackamas County, and 25 cities within. One of Metro's major responsibility is the management of the solid waste stream. As part of that, we aggressively seek opportunities to divert reusable and recyclable material from the waste stream, aka landfills. Our efforts have helped our region achieve a 59% recycling rate. One of our premier tools for helping us achieve that is our recycling information hotline, and I'll be speaking to that a little bit further. But first, I want to make sure that I've done what I can to ensure that we have framed the problem. Local governments in our region are faced with the serious challenge of ensuring that our citizens have environmentally sound opportunities for the reuse and recycling of their old electronic products. Certainly, as you've heard others speak to, many of these products have short lifespans and contain toxic components. And manufacturers and retailers have a special responsibility to help us meet this challenge. Now, this challenge shows no sign of diminishing. Just to illustrate the point, Metro's recycling hotline has received tremendous growth from the business community as well as households seeking places to take their used electronics for recycling and reuse. For example, our call rate has increased from over 3,900 calls in 2001 to over 6,800 in 2006. That's an increase of 3.8% of our total overall calls to the hotline to over 7.2% in a six-year time period alone. So that was framing the problem for you. But what kind of solutions are we after? Metro very much supports a shared responsibility model. Electronic manufacturers, distributors, and retailers, together with consumers, nonprofit groups, and local governments, need to work together with this shared responsibility for addressing the e-waste issue. Certainly, we at Metro acknowledge that we play an important role in the promotion and education about electronics recycling efforts, as well as in developing market opportunities for recycled materials. However, local governments alone should not be expected to share the burden of solving this e-waste problem. We also need to ensure that we have convenient and environmentally safe recycling opportunities that are financed by the manufacturers. There's tremendous need, and we need to make sure that the e-wastes are properly and effectively managed. Your legislation should ensure that programs are provided by manufacturers and that meet these objectives. We at Metro welcome the opportunity to work with you to craft legislation, address any issues or questions that you may have in meeting the challenge that we face with e-waste. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I also want to thank you. I know that you're newly elected, so congratulations.
Thank
but
you.
Metro has been very helpful from the beginning. We had a task force two sessions ago. Metro actually donated a lot of staff time because we didn't have the money to hire or have staff people from the state. So I just want to say I appreciate the assistance that Metro has offered in along the course of development of legislation. So I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Mr.
Gowan?
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder and fellow representatives. Thank you so much for having me today. I appreciate this opportunity. By way of introduction, my name is Jack McGowan. I'm the executive director of Solve. Solve is considered the largest volunteer nonprofit now in the Northwest. 37 years ago, Governor Tom McCall had a great dream. And that was to create a nonprofit that would really look at Oregon in total. Our charge is to link all of the government agencies of the state, all of the business community, and most importantly, all of the citizens, like a three-legged stool, to really bring these collective forces together in creating a better Oregon through volunteerism. Solve now engages close to 100,000 volunteer opportunities annually in over 250 Oregon communities. When Tom McCall created Solve, one of the things that he forbid this organization from doing, which would be to endorse or oppose legislation, candidates for public office, whatever it may be. So I am here not to endorse or oppose the proposed legislation. I am here only to offer empirical data, if I might. And what I would like to do is to, first of all, congratulate Metro, because Metro has really been a remarkable partner, government partner in Solve, in really looking at what is plaguing Oregon, which is the amount of illegal dumping that is going on throughout the state. Just to give you an idea, in only four counties, Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington County, through the Metro Solve partnership, out of wetlands, stream beds, and natural areas, working only one day a year, we have collected now over 12 million pounds of illegally dumped solid waste. 12 million pounds. And what we can see through the evolution of not only the beach cleanups, which we started well over 20 years ago, but also in the illegal dump sites that are plaguing natural areas in every county of this state, we are seeing an evolution in illegal dumping. 20 years ago, the illegal dumping would be mostly on rural areas, and it would be mostly things that like washers, dryers, refrigerators, stoves, things like that, tires. But now we see an evolution of illegal dumping. And the illegal dumping is taking the form of e-waste, which is now becoming more and more visible in the public consciousness. The e-waste is not only illegal dumping of just indiscriminately tossing the television or whatever it may be down into the wetland or stream bed and forgetting about it, but more and more unscrupulous members of our society are using these as targets. I can bring you up to the Mount Hood National Forest. I can bring you to the Tillamook or Siuslaw State Forest. I can bring you to the Deschutes National Forest, the Willamette National Forest, and you'll see more and more target sites that literally have hundreds and hundreds of different types of targets being used. The old plinking the tin can off the fence post is a rare occurrence. What we are finding now with these illegal targets are in more and more televisions, old CRTs, indiscriminate use that make fine targets because they love to see the CRT explode as the 357 Magnum hits. And so what we are seeing, especially on the west side of the Cascades, is that probably every stream bed or every, let's say, ravine is either a secondary stream bed or leading into a wetland. And when you're talking in the rural areas, these wetlands, these stream beds, are really groundwater that are being used by rural residents for their drinking water. We live in a rural part of Oregon, my family and I. We live in the Helvetia area. Our well is 400 feet deep. Thank God we do not have illegal dumping going on, but right over the hill from us, we have found time and again television sets and others that have been disposed of in stream beds, and right down from those stream beds, you'll have a farm, you'll have a rural residence, and unbeknownst to that rural resident, he or she possibly, through their well system, is contracting heavy metals and other types of pollutants. So I think what's important about this, ladies and gentlemen, is really what this is doing in the natural area. The concept of recycling has been a proud tradition in this state. We pride ourselves on the visionary legislation that time and time again, through bipartisanship, has really brought Oregon to a national and international model. What I ask of you today is not only in a bipartisan way, but really in a collective way of industry, of business, and the legislature coming together to collectively come together with proven new plans, proven new ideas that can help us reduce this this toxic flow into our natural areas. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Great. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Are there any questions for the panel? No?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Okay. So next I'm going to ask Bob Danko from the Department of Environmental Quality to come up. And then we also have Elizabeth Grossman and Pamela Brody Hine. And we've asked them to talk about framing the computer e-waste recycling problem.
Madam
Chair, with you.
Thank you. Members of the committee, I'm Bob Danko with the Department of Environmental Quality. And I want to personally thank you for being a leader on this issue. It's a very important issue for our department. I'll be brief, as behind me and here at the table are very strong testifiers who will have a lot of good information for the committee. I've been representing the department for 20 years on solid waste and recycling matters, and I've been lucky enough to be at the legislature here and shape some of the bills that the legislature has passed. I'm really excited about being part of this one, and I think that this one has a good chance of success. The problem is has been already highlighted to you. It'll be highlighted over and over again. The history I'd like to go into a little bit. At the federal level, there's been conversations, meetings, discussions, trying to reach a national approach, at least since the year 2000, probably before. Here we are, 2007. There isn't agreement at the federal level yet, and more states are beginning to take action themselves. In 2005, it's already been referenced, the Oregon legislature considered a bill. It had in it what we call an advanced recovery fee, or ARF, where the consumer would pay a fee when they buy a computer. The money would be pooled, or e-waste. The money would be pooled and be used to then recycle the e-waste when it came back into the stream. The fee would be $5 to $10 per unit. That bill did not pass. Meantime, other states in our region have moved ahead. 2003, California passed their bill focusing on cathode ray tube monitors and TVs, those CRTs. They amended their law in 2004, added flat panel monitors and display devices. That bill, that law is what we call an ARF, an advanced recovery fee, where consumers pay the $6 to $10 fee when they buy a unit. It's pooled by California state government. The government then pays out to recyclers to recycle the e-waste. You'll have different people testify today, I'm sure, as to the good and bad of that approach. Washington stepped up last year, 2006, passed a comprehensive measure dealing with computers and monitors, laptops, and televisions. Washington did what we call the manufacturer responsibility approach, and that is the approach that we're talking about for Oregon today. In Washington, a manufacturer can do its own program, team up with other manufacturers, do a program, or be part of what they call the standard program. Washington is going through a long process of preparing to implement that, significant rulemaking and so on, and it's set to kick off January 1, 2009. I don't want to forget British Columbia in our region and often a forward-looking province in Canada. Last year, they too adopted regulations on e-waste recycling and used a little different approach. Basically said, manufacturers, take care of the problem. Develop a plan and let us know how you're going to do it. They use a third-party organization in British Columbia, and implementation is supposed to be this summer. Recognizing that this session was going to consider e-waste again, we at the Department of Environmental Quality did a survey of what we call a baseline e-waste management survey last summer. And I heard the survey referenced already. We found some interesting things, and I've listed out some of the things on page 3 of my testimony. While we found that what we call 95% of the state's population has reasonable access, reasonable access doesn't necessarily solve the problem, and I'll get into that in a minute. We also found that 11 rural counties, all east of the Cascades, really don't have any access. They may have a once-a-year collection at a retailer, but nothing really dependable that you could publicize. So east of the Cascades, besides the Columbia Gorge and besides Deschutes County and the Bend area, there is no reasonable access for recycling e-waste. But even under the term reasonable access, there are problems. First, reasonable access doesn't address fees. Often, a recycler will charge a significant amount of money to recycle, say, a television. If you had your television and you knew that the cost to recycle it was $40 and the cost to dispose of it is maybe $5 and the cost to do something else with it is free, including storage in your basement or dungeon, as I heard referenced, you might choose the dungeon, the basement, or disposal. So having reasonable access doesn't mean it's going to result in recycling. Also, it seems that the programs that are free or cheap may not be environmentally sound. We found in our survey that most of the collectors and handlers do not do good work in determining what happens to the products they collect after they've handled them. In other words, they don't really track the stuff downstream. Also, there's really no standard for certification, like third-party certification, to determine that people are using best management practices for this waste. There are several different types of certification out there, but none of them have really caught hold, and there really seems to be a need to have one certification process to make sure everybody's playing with by the same rules. It's not fair that some recyclers and handlers are trying to do the right thing, and there's others out there who may not be doing the right thing. It puts them, obviously, at a big competitive disadvantage. It's hard to get total confidence in the numbers, but we think right now about 15 to 20% of e-waste is being recycled in the state. A lesser amount is being reused. And disposal could be as much as 50 million pounds a year. Finally, from my comments, there are several key elements that I think, or the department thinks, should be in any legislation, and I've listed those on page 4. Manufacturer responsibility, no fees, environmentally sound management practices, product labeling, collection statewide, urban and rural. Using existing infrastructure, that's very important in our state because we do have some good infrastructure out there for collecting e-waste. Coverage of products, starting at least with the CRTs, the computers, the laptops and TVs, flat panels, but being able to expand easily. Disposal ban, both Washington and California, once their systems get in place, banning the disposal of the material. In this state, we have banned the disposal of car batteries, we have banned the disposal of tires, we have banned the disposal of appliances, and it has worked just fine as long as there is a feasible alternative. Obviously, the system needs to be enforced. There needs to be some sort of performance goals or reporting. Obviously, a key is the public education side, awareness. There are a lot of options right there now, but all of us end up storing this stuff in our dungeons. And, of course, if the feds ever do step up, we should take a close look at what they do, because in the end, it might be best for everybody if there was one uniform federal program.
Thank you, Mr. Danko. Since we have a lot of people that want to come up and share their thoughts, I'm going to ask if we can hold questions to the end of the panel. So thank you. Ms. Grissman.
Well, thank you very much to the committee chair and the chair for inviting me to speak today and provide some background information on this issue. My name is Elizabeth Grossman. I'm a freelance writer and journalist based in Portland and the author of a book called High-Tech Trash, Digital Devices, Hidden Toxics, and Human Health that was published in May 2006 by Island Press. The book was entirely my own conception and was written independently without support or input from any organizations or institutions. It explores the environmental and health impacts of the entire life cycle of high-tech electronics from raw materials through the manufacturing process to what happens when we dispose of this equipment. But my comments here will focus on the fate and impacts of discarded and obsolete electronics. First, to give a sense of what the volume we're dealing with, Americans now own over 2 billion pieces of consumer electronics, which includes over 200 million computers, over 200 million televisions, and at least 200 million cell phones. It's estimated that about 5 to 7 million tons of electronics are discarded in the U.S. each year, and the federal government alone disposes of some 10,000 computers a week, a number that does not include equipment owned by the military or the post office. Electronics are now the fastest growing part of the municipal waste stream, both in the U.S. and in Europe. The EPA estimates that only about 10% of our discarded electronics are now being recycled, and that some 2 million tons of e-waste go to U.S. landfills each year, where they contribute the majority of the heavy metals deposited in those landfills, including about 40% of the lead, a well-documented neurotoxin now in our landfills. A large traditional desktop computer can contain as much as 4 to 8 pounds of lead. And in addition to lead, the glass in monitors and TV screen units contain cadmium and barium, both highly toxic to humans. But circuit boards, particularly those now entering the waste stream, also contain lead. And in a toxicity test, 23 out of 33 cell phones exceeded U.S. safety standards for lead. Laptops, VCRs, printers, and remote control devices put through similar tests for lead also exceeded safety standards. Among the other toxic elements commonly found in electronics are mercury, which is used in flat panel display screens, hexavalent chromium, which is our carcinogen, and beryllium, and beryllium dust causes an incurable lung disease. The plastics used in electronics also contain an array of hazardous materials, among them brominated flame retardants and plasticizers that include phthalates and nonyl phenols, all documented to interfere with the endocrine system and reproductive development, among other health impacts. These flame retardants and other chemicals are documented to be emerging from electronics landfilled in North America and to be accumulating in human blood and fat tissues. Electronics wires and cables are commonly coated with PVC plastic, that's polyvinyl chloride, that often also contains lead and other heavy metals. When burned, PVC releases dioxins and furans, both human carcinogens, and its hazardous chemical constituents can leach out of landfills. Of the electronics that do go to recyclers in the U.S., it's estimated that at least half are exported for materials recovery that often takes place under environmentally and socially irresponsible conditions in countries that include China, India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Large amounts of obsolete equipment are also being dumped and burned in open landfills in Nigeria. In China, India, and elsewhere in South and Southeast Asia, equipment is processed under primitive conditions that include open burning and uncontained dumping of plastics and leaded glass. The result is highly contaminated local water, air, and soil, but also a release of toxic particulates into the global atmosphere, into air currents documented to drift from Asia to the U.S., including to Oregon. Currently, there is no national system to regulate e-waste in the U.S., and there are no federal laws that specifically prohibit the export of e-waste for unsound, unsafe materials recovery and recycling. Electronics recycling is now mandatory throughout the European Union, as it is in Japan and a number of other countries. Regulations in Europe and elsewhere have prompted manufacturers worldwide to institute numerous materials and design improvements, but these don't affect the equipment now entering our waste stream. It's estimated that between 2003 and 2010, the number of computers that will become potential scrap will grow to over 100 million units a year, a number that does not include all of the TVs that may be discarded as a result of the projected switch in 2009 to digital TV. And I think that's all I have time for, so I'll stop here. And I'm happy to provide source notes for these facts. And I did submit a copy of my book, which has copious footnotes. But if you have any other questions, happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Pamela? And okay. You may want to mention also your role in the task force, the Senate Bill 740, which was left off of the DEQ history, and that's the third time we're hearing this issue.
Okay. Hello. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Pamela Brody-Hine, and I'm the principal of a small Oregon-based consulting practice. I was also one of the authors, along with a team of consultants, that worked on the study that Bob mentioned for DEQ. And then 2 years ago, I also helped organize and facilitate the task force that looked at electronic product stewardship.
I think it was 4 years ago. It's been that long.
So what I'm going to do today is talk about some of the findings of the study that we did. The full report can be found on the DEQ website, and I'll be emailing my testimony so you can have that link if you'd like it. And the main purpose of the study was to examine gaps in the e-scrap services in Oregon and learn what the current environmental management practices are that are being used. We conducted a survey of electronics recyclers in the state, contacting 74 entities. So we contacted everybody that was identified as handling electronic scrap in any way. We had a very good response rate of nearly 90%, so 65 entities, and found a whole array of information. I'm going to focus on just a couple parts. Some of the things have already been touched on. But what we found is that the state has the beginnings of an e-scrap collection infrastructure. But not surprisingly, the services are truly concentrated in the populated areas of the state, the Willamette Valley. And that southern and eastern Oregon, 11 counties in all, have no reasonable collection points readily available. I would like to say that the other counties have at least one collection point, so may not be close by, but there's at least one. Interestingly, about two-thirds of the collection points we identified are comprised of thrift shops, charitable organizations, and other nonprofits. So they are really largely contributing to the collection infrastructure. Several of the surveyed entities have many, many collection points. We also found that the e-scrap industry in Oregon appears to be in flux about environmental practices, with a wide range of practices being used by recyclers. It was particularly notable in the survey results that a fair portion of the e-scrap collected in Oregon appears to be ultimately exported overseas for processing, for final use or for disposition. Electronics recycling is a very competitive business, and overseas export is the least cost option. This creates a very uneven playing field for recyclers that do not export. Now, it's important to note that not all export is the same. Some material is certainly processed in a socially and environmentally responsible manner. However, without downstream tracking, no one knows what is being handled responsibly and what isn't. The survey also found a fairly low level of tracking of downstream vendors, partly due to lack of interest or concern, but really mostly due to the cost. Cost is a huge impediment to responsible management of e-waste, either to process domestically or to screen and track overseas downstream processors. And I'd also just like to mention that this places a particular burden on small businesses. In addition, I want to mention that data security is getting to be a bigger and bigger issue. No one wants their personal information getting into the wrong hands. And managing data discretion is a responsible practice that also costs money and not something that we want skimped on. The study found a strong desire amongst recyclers for more guidance from the state on environmental practices and assistance in leveling the playing field between exporters and domestic handlers. It can be very difficult, again, for recyclers wishing to process e-scrap domestically in order to assure their customers of safe and compliant environmental practices, or to do downstream tracking of overseas vendors, to compete with companies incurring less expense by simply exporting e-scrap. Education and outreach can definitely help, but it's really not sufficient to level the playing field and support environmentally and socially responsible management of e-scrap, because it's truly driven by the finances of the situation. A law which provided financing and regulatory oversight would address this issue and the difficulty facing many recyclers. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, and I want to thank the panel for that excellent background information, and want to see if there's any questions. Representative Cannon and Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think all of you sound like highly knowledgeable experts, so I'll just leave it open to you to decide who can answer this best. I'm wondering...
A lot of finger-pointing going on
here. I'm just curious what other states have done to address the issue, which I think all of you raised about downstream, where this actually ends up, even if the intention of the consumer or the shop that's taken it back is good. We're hearing that there is a real range in where it actually ends up. And what if, Mr. Dinka, you mentioned the efforts in Washington, California, and British Columbia. Do any of those states, have they tried to address this issue, or have they successfully addressed this issue in their legislation?
Madam Chair, Representative Cannon, I'm not the most knowledgeable person on that. I know Washington, for instance, is going through a rulemaking process to address environmental management standards. I'm not sure if they are going to tackle, like, the question of export. I understand it was in their law, but was taken out of their law when the governor signed it. So that is almost a separate question on export. With me today is Jan Whitworth here in the front row, and she's very knowledgeable on a lot of this. Do you want to respond to that?
You need to be in a mic, Jan.
Yeah.
have to sit in the hot seat.
Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee.
For the record.
So for the record again, yes. I'm Jan Whitworth with Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. The state of Washington is developing rulemaking that will require recyclers who participate in the system to certify to certain things, and part of that question will be answered through the certification that they'll be required to do. And I know that the state of Maine did not do regulations for their law. They did guidance, but require recyclers who participate in their system to self-certify. So it's a little bit less of an oversight role, but that's the way that they have handled it, and I'm not sure British Columbia.
Thank you, Jan. Do you know the state of California, if they included that in their legislation?
They do require certification, and I'm not sure precisely how their rules address the export and due diligence question.
Okay, thank you. Representative Cannon? Representative Burley?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, appreciate the panel's comments and the first panel as well. I think there's a lot of principles here that certainly resonate with me, and I very much agree with the statistic about 11 rural counties having no access. I think, as you pointed out, Mr. Danko, Deschutes County is the only one on the east side, to my knowledge, that has one. And one of the things that I was sharing with the chair here a few weeks ago, that I wanted to test this system a little bit. After many, many, many years, my wife and I finally broke down and bought a new TV. So I said, well, I'm going to take the old one down to the landfill and see what happens. So I paid him $25, which I didn't think was unreasonable, but that's me. You know, the problem is there's a lot of other consumers out there that would find that extraordinary. But when I asked the gentleman, I said, well, where's this going? All he could say was, well, it's going to Eugene. And I said, what are they going to do with it? And he said, I don't know. And, you know, that's... to me, therein lies the concern. I mean, what do we do with these things downstream, I guess is the correct term for that. So I was kind of interested, and I don't think you touched on this, or I might have missed it, Mr. Danko, but this slide about downstream vendor tracking methods, perhaps you could touch on that, because I don't think this was addressed in the testimony earlier.
Well, actually, Pamela can also speak to this, and she helped develop this information. And this is just an example of ways that vendors can do downstream tracking, some of them better than others. And it's really intended to show you, of the people that we surveyed, how many are doing something. And you can see that the number in parentheses is really the number of people who are doing something, both for collectors and for the people who are processing material. And it really is showing you that not very many people are doing much of anything. Is the purpose of that slide.
Follow up. Thank you.
Well,
and likewise, chart two, where it talks about the different types of environmental certification, I guess the question would be, from a policy perspective, would it be advisable, if we were to go down this road, to basically specify the type of downstream vendor tracking method that we would use in Oregon and specify the certification that we would accept in Oregon, or would we just pretty much leave that open? And
I, just based on my journalistic research in this area, I spent an enormous amount of time calling recyclers all over the country, asking them about downstream processors and vendors, and typically the answer was they really didn't know. And some of the larger recyclers that deal with Fortune 500 companies that, in addition to environmental liability concerns, have very serious data security concerns, they devote quite a substantial amount of resources to site visit downstream tracking, which is something, obviously, that many companies can't do. And my sense is that if Oregon did include standards for tracking and certification in a bill, that might actually be the first one that does include specifics. Hmm. I think there are general guidelines and different mechanisms for approaching that, but I don't actually think any of the state bills yet are prescriptive in that area.
And just to follow up on that, Mr. Vice Chair, I did have a conversation with the rulemakers at the state of Washington yesterday to find out what their status of the rulemaking is. The state of Washington put in general language, but they actually are defining through rule the certification process, and they're in the process of doing that right now.
And EPA is also facilitating a dialogue with industry and governments to develop some kind of recycling certification standards as well. So I think that probably developing them through a process and maybe then putting them into rule or guidance, as Maine put theirs in guidance, is perhaps a better idea than putting them straight into the legislation.
Okay. And one last question,
Follow-up?
Madam Chair. Something in Mr. Denko's written testimony caught my attention, and I'll explain why. This may seem like an odd question. In the state of Washington, I notice you say that it prohibits the use of prison labor in recycling, and the reason I ask is because here in Oregon, the director of the Department of Corrections has a constitutional mandate to try and find employment for our state inmates. So I was curious if there was some particular reason why the state of Washington specifically prohibited that practice.
If anyone on the panel can address that.
I can't speak specifically to the conditions in Washington, where I believe it was either state or county correctional facilities that were doing some e-waste processing, and I don't know the details of the processing, but I did research extensively into the federal Bureau of Prisons Industries recycling program, and the problem there is that it was happening under conditions that would never have, safety conditions that would never have been accepted in the private sector. Inmate workers and prison staff were being exposed to significant levels of heavy metals as a result of smashing and breaking of computer monitors. And I'd be happy to provide you lots more information, but because of those conditions, I believe the Justice Department is now investigating all of those conditions, and I think that may have raised concerns throughout comparable programs.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Representative Smith?
Thank you, Chair Dinkfelder. It's kind of a depressing topic. Afraid to even drink this water. I want to ask a question, and please, please don't take my question as confrontational because I don't mean it that way. What's the difference between a computer, a laptop in the landfill, and a laptop on our desk right now?
I should have prefaced that, and usually when I have talked to people about this, I say very clearly that while equipment is intact and being used properly, none of the heavy metals are going to leap out and harm you. That's just not going to happen. There's some issues with some chemicals and plastics, but in that regard, there's no difference between the flame retardants that are in a laptop computer and the upholstery or the plastic used in a car or an airplane.
Okay.
But while equipment is intact, it's not going to harm you. The real concern is improper disposal and transportation and situations like Mr. McGowan described.
If I can follow up. Thank you. I represent very remote parts of the state of Oregon where distance is a significant issue. Folks could live 70 miles away from the nearest city or town. And at the same time, I also represent folks with communities that have per capita incomes of less than $12,000 per year. How do we help these folks to be good citizens?
I think by creating a free and convenient collection system. If we make it free and we make it convenient,
is it
and we create education and outreach.
Can I follow up?
Follow up.
This is a new issue to me.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it. By free, is it free to local government as well?
Yes, I think that's certainly an option.
Because part of my concern, if I can mm-hmm. have this dialogue, part of my concern is if you take Wheeler County with a population of 1,450 citizens and a per capita income of about $14,000 mm-hmm. Per individual, the ability for local government to bear the burden of this needed program, no question in my mind it's needed, but to bear that burden, they just can't do it. I mean, they can't take care of the car batteries they have.
The law in Washington, the manufacturers bear the cost of the collection, transportation, and processing. Local governments can choose to assist with the collection, but they do get reimbursed.
Well, Madam Chair, just my last thought is I see this train's moving forward. I would just hope as we work through this that we're very sensitive to rural Eastern Oregon because they want to do the right thing. They're concerned about their environment. The example that was given about shooting televisions out in the forest where I come from, that'll get you shot. Folks don't do that. And so I want to make sure that these people who want to do the right thing have the ability to do the right thing and they're not priced out of it or penalized in some way out of it.
Thank you for those comments, Representative Smith. And we did invite somebody from the county to be here, and they couldn't make it. And we will definitely, and we have been working with the League of Oregon Cities and the Association of Oregon Counties. So that is a very good comment. Thank you for bringing that up.
And I just would want to add as a response to the concerns of more remote populations and less well-funded populations that particularly with school systems and local governments that based on what I learned in my research, it seems very important to have any kind of collection and recycling program be one that can be adapted to serve the needs of smaller businesses and smaller communities because otherwise people go to those low-cost options which don't usually end up in the best circumstances.
Okay, thank you so much. And hold on, don't move yet. We have one more question.
Slow things down a lot.
No, that's,
but
it may,
and
that's
if there's,
okay.
And if, there's a, if there's a source for this, the answer that is expected later, feel free to defer the question.
Okay.
The question is, what is an ideal-looking recycling project for or handling of, say, an old computer look like? I mean, what is happening to that material? How much of the material ends up in a landfill? How much is truly recycled? Where does it go if it can't be recycled and shouldn't go into a landfill?
Very quickly, ideally, nothing ends up in a landfill or an incinerator. Under the best of circumstances, things are separated into glass, metals, and plastics. Computers contain a huge amount of metals. That's the value and the driver in commercial recycling. And, for instance, the copper and the precious metals are essentially 100% recyclable, the industry told me, and can be used an infinite amount of times. Plastics are currently the biggest challenge for a number of reasons. Glass is kind of on the downward trend as we switch to the flat panels, but the leaded glass, even though it is a challenge, is recyclable.
Just a quick follow-up. Just rough guess about how much would it cost if you were doing the what would be the cost to recycle, say, a standard desktop computer to do it that way? What would that cost, price tag be?
And Hewlett-Packard will be coming up to testify, and we can ask him that question if you don't feel comfortable.
Well, I was just going to give cents per pound numbers. So,
Sure, that would be helpful.
In California, the collection costs are reimbursed at 20 cents per pound, and the processing costs are reimbursed at 28 cents per pound. There are some folks that think that's a little generous, but that gives you an idea of really what it costs to do it responsibly.
Okay. Any other questions for this panel? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hopefully you'll stay by in case there's other questions that come up. I'd like to invite Katie Daly with Recycling Advocates and Jeremiah Bauman from Osper to come up, and then we'll have some industry panels and recyclers and haulers. So we're trying to cover all the bases here today. Well, you know, I don't see Jeremiah, so.
Yeah. He was here just a second ago.
People tend to do that whenever it's like I'm calling them up. They're out in the.
Well, I can get going because I know we're limited on time.
Sure.
Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. Thank you very much for having me. My name is Katie Daly, and I want to make it clear I'm the political director at Oregon League of Conservation Voters. I have to do this disclaimer, but I'm on the board of Recycling Advocates, and that's who I'm representing here today in front of you. Recycling Advocates was founded in 1987 and is Oregon's only citizen-based grassroots group dedicated to creating a sustainable future through local efforts to reduce, reuse, and recycle. We've been really involved with this legislation. In 2003, we sponsored the first electronic stewardship legislation in Oregon, which created Senate Bill 867, which is what Pamela was talking about earlier. Many of those testifying today were involved in that committee, and you'll probably hear some results from that. We also launched the Western Electronic Product Stewardship Initiative, better known as WEPSI, which helps fund the National Electronic Product Stewardship Initiative, which is a multi-stakeholder dialogue with the agreed-upon goal to develop a system to maximize the collection, reuse, and recycling of used electronics and to improve the design of electronic products. I just want to start out by applauding the bipartisan leadership that the legislature is demonstrating on tackling this important issue. I think we have changed the debate to a certain extent to one of not is there a problem, and I think the people that were testifying here earlier showed that, you know, there definitely is a problem, but really what is the solution to the problem? And, you know, there are a lot of complex issues associated with determining what the proper solution of a program is, but Recycling Advocates is really dedicated to finding a solution that we all can be happy with and that provides a solution for the citizens of the state of this Oregon to provide a free, easy recycling method for this used electronic waste. We have been working with a diverse set of stakeholders, along with Representative Dingfelder, since last session to put together draft legislation. This culminated in House Bill 2395, which is very similar to Department of Environmental Quality's proposal, which I believe is now House Bill 2626. In addition, Hewlett-Packard, with the support of Senator Morse, has also drafted legislation. And although all of these approaches are somewhat different, they're all primarily based on a manufacturer responsibility model and establish a statewide free convenient program for Oregon consumers. And it's my estimation, obviously this is a ballpark, that we're about 80% of all three bills are in agreement with each other and have similarities, and it's just kind of hammering out that final 20%. That's your responsibility to do here. The working group that RA was involved with developed a set of guiding principles, and I provided a fact sheet for you on which on the back is a set of guiding principles. And we feel that these represent the interests of a number of different stakeholders and form the basis of a sound working program. A lot of them you've heard earlier today. We agree with all of the principles, but I wanted to highlight those that we feel are critical to the success for any electronics recycling and reuse program. And that's one of them, reuse. I'd like to talk about that a little bit later. And the first is that any program should ensure that environmentally sound management of used electronics. And I think Lizzie Grossman and Pamela Brody-Hine and Bob Danko did a really good job of talking about the problems of what happens downstream. And I just want to say that, like Representative Burley was mentioning, you know, a lot of people want to do the right thing. That's why they're stockpiling their products. And there are lots of opportunities for people to recycle. But they have no idea when they're recycling. They think they're doing the right thing. They have no idea that 80% of what they're recycling is actually being shipped overseas, and then, you know, who knows what's happening with it then. So although I think the ethic of recycling is there amongst consumers, we just need to provide the confidence for them to be able to have a program that they can confidently use and know that, A, what's happening with their products is you know, being done in an environmentally responsible manner. And then what was mentioned earlier also is that the data is there's some integrity with the data, and that their identity isn't going to be stolen, and that you know, bad things are going to happen. I think all three of our bills may have missed that as a point, and it's something I wanted to bring forward and make sure that you consider when you're considering final legislation. I have a couple of DVDs here from the Basel Action Network that talks about some of the impacts of our electronic waste that's shipped overseas, and the second one especially talks about some of the, you know, the data that these guys find. You know, like I think it was the country of Sweden. There was, you know, their State Department data was able to be read off of the computers that people were finding in Africa and Asia. So I think it's a really important issue that we want to make sure we tackle. You know, I also wanted to talk about the scope of products that are covered. I know that there are some proposals that just want to cover monitors, televisions, and laptops, but as you can see by the event today, there's a huge need for computers, and, you know, I got calls all week about, can I bring in my printer, can I bring in my cell phone, can I bring in my stereo? So I think that we need to realize that all of these items have toxic materials in them, and that people are looking for a solution. And I wanted to echo what Representative Clem was saying earlier, that, you know, electronics are, it's, you know, a little bit different than the bottle bill, where electronic items are changing daily, and we can't predict, you know, 1 year, let alone 35 years down the future, what kind of electronic items we're going to be using. So we want to make sure that we have a program that is adaptable to the changes of technology, and that make sure that we're capturing as much as we possibly can and not leaving some things outside of the system. I also wanted to bring up who is allowed to participate in the program, and I think these comments were made at the end of the last testimony. We've talked about allowing small businesses, obviously consumers, nonprofits, to participate in actually bringing their computers back. I would also like to have you consider allowing governments, and anything where the taxpayer is actually responsible, you know, in the end, for the costs associated with doing the recycling or the disposal of electronic items. You know, in the end, if the manufacturer is going to bear the responsibility, you know, we all are consumers, whether we're in large businesses, whether it's a government agency, or whether we're a consumer. So I think that's something I'd like you to consider and think about when you're crafting legislation. And the fifth is to promote the use of the already established group of local collectors and recyclers. We will be talking with a few recyclers, I think, later on in the panel. The Earth Protection Services, who is helping with the press event outside, as well as Free Geek, are two very good models for environmentally responsible entities who are already there. I also have a Free Geek DVD that kind of describes their model, which brings up the point of you know, encouraging not only local recyclers, but also encouraging the reuse of computers, because really the highest and best use is to reuse a computer and reuse the components before it actually gets to the point where it has to be managed and broken down into and recycled. So if we can do something that actually encourages us to use things over and over again before we end up doing the disposal portion of it, that would be something that I think would be very beneficial. And finally, we talked about this a little bit earlier. It's the idea of federal preemption. And I appreciate Bob Danko's comments about if there is a national program. And it looks like there may be some movement toward something nationally, but not nearly the size and the scope of what we're talking about and what has been what has been submitted so far. And so I would like to make sure that if there is any federal legislation that we aren't preempted if it's weaker than the legislation that we end up passing. So that's it. We applaud this committee for working toward one of the nation's most comprehensive electronic recycling bills. By launching Comprehensive Electronic Waste Recycling Program, Oregon can once again be a recycling leader and set the stage for others throughout the country to follow.
Thank you. Jeremiah, we found you.
Good afternoon,
and we're running short on time. I know you talk fast, so you'll do a good job.
good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I apologize for the confusion. Too many moving balls at the same hour. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. Being cognizant of the time, I'll keep this very brief. I understand, and I've listened to a lot of the testimony already on the extraordinary environmental and public health and local infrastructure problems created by this, by electronics products and the rapidly growing waste stream. So let me keep it to some of the important principles. I'll also try to focus not only from the environmental perspective, but I think also from the consumer perspective for how this problem gets solved. The first and from Osberg's perspective, most important principle is that of manufacturer responsibility. The cost of the system should be borne by manufacturers for a couple of reasons. The primary reason is that manufacturers are just the only people who are in a position to change the way this problem is expanding right now, both in terms of designing products for reuse to slow down the growth in the waste stream that's coming off,
to design products that include less toxic components, which makes them cheaper to handle at the end of their life, and to design them so they can be more easily disassembled so that subparts of the product can be reused or recycled, and so the entire device can be recycled. Manufacturers are the only ones in a position to do that, and in cost incentive, incentivize manufacturers to do all of those things because it's simply cheaper to do those things than it is to dispose of them. So it creates the right incentive structure to have that cost be focused on manufacturers. It's of course worth noting who should not pay for the program. I think everybody would agree government is not exactly in a position to be paying for more programs, especially for programs that we know are going to be expanding as the volume of waste expands. It's not simply because government is strapped for resources right now, but it's also because, again, if government simply handles all of the waste that comes out of these products, there's no incentive for manufacturers to redesign products to decrease that waste, since somebody else is paying to clean up the problem. This concept has a long history, particularly in our hazardous waste laws, dealing with these kinds of products that have toxic implications, where the polluter pays principle has long said that those who are generating a product with hazardous materials problems should bear the responsibility for keeping it out of the environment and eliminating any public health threat. It's also, from our perspective, equally important that consumers not simply be charged a fee up front. And I'd like to clarify something. That's not because Osberg thinks consumers should never pay for any part of a problem, or that manufacturers or industries should always pay for the entire problem. It's simply that a fee up front removes a critical market tool for this program to work. If the fee is on the manufacturers and it's tied to how much waste they're generating, then the manufacturers are subject to market competition and they will compete to find the cheapest way to develop products that can be recycled effectively and efficiently. If there's a fee that's passed explicitly to consumers, there simply is no incentive to solve this problem at its root, and that's a really important principle. The final principles I'll just note briefly, because they've been mentioned. Again, we should make this program broad in scope to begin with because we know there are a lot of problems out there, and so we should make sure those are already included. But equally important, make sure that administratively the program can be expanded. As an organization that has put significant time and resources into trying to expand the bottle bill for more than a decade now to include something as simple as plastic water bottles, I think we could all agree we don't want to have to be amending the law every time a new product comes onto the market. Third principle is that any person or organization, including businesses, should be able to use the program. From our perspective on this issue, a consumer is anybody who's buying and using one of these products, whether you're an individual, a small business, or a large business. To make the incentives work right, it doesn't make sense to be charging higher fees for someone who happens to buy more computers. We think everybody should have access to free, available recycling. That said, it's certainly reasonable to make sure that administrative and logistical problems aren't created. So if there are rules regarding a certain number of computers or other electronic devices being returned, prior arrangements have to be made. You couldn't just drop off 300 television sets with no notice. All of that is perfectly reasonable, but everybody should be allowed to participate in the program. And then the final principle has already been hit on several times, so I'll just mention it, which is, I think, requiring environmentally responsible management and having an appropriate certification and traffic tracking system should deal with a lot of the issues that do come up around inadequate disposal, around exporting to countries where there are no standards. If manufacturers are certifying that their products are being disposed of responsibly, I think we can handle a lot of those issues.
Thank you. Any questions from this panel? Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bowen, I just wanted to just probe one of the points you made. You made the point that there shouldn't be a visible charge to the consumer at the point of sale. And I just wanted to raise the question, wouldn't that communicate an important message to the public that, in effect, they have prepaid for responsible disposal and maybe make it more likely that they would assure that it gets back to the point where it will be responsibly then dealt with than a situation where it's invisible and just within the price that they're being charged by the vendor?
Madam Chair, Representative McPherson, I think that's an excellent point. My perspective on this issue is less with whether the fee is visible and more with whether the fee is mandated in the program that it shall be consumers paying for it. I think you could theoretically create a fee structure that would incentivize the appropriate disposal by having it be tied to the toxic components and how recyclable the product is, But I think having an administrative body try to sort out that complicated factors and rank those and tie them to how much the fee should be would be an incredibly complicated bureaucratic process, and it's easier to simply have manufacturers bear the burden. I don't think, although I would want to work through this a little bit more, there would be a problem with allowing manufacturers to disclose how much of the price of that product is going to ensure that the recycling, because then you'd get both benefits. You'd have the market incentive there to keep those costs low and therefore design the products to be cheaper to recycle, and you'd still have consumers being aware of that. But I think you're right. I think one of the reasons that the bottle bill has such high return rates is not just because there's an incentive to bring it back, but because you know when you buy the product that there's a program in place that you can dispose of it. So it's an important education tool as well.
Right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for this panel? Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Moving right along, because we're going to try to make sure that we get everybody up who was invited to speak. Next, I will invite up Marcy Eastham from Hewlett-Packard. Is Jim Craven here? Jim? And Tom Gallagher, who I thought I saw at the back of the room, but he seemed to have escaped. If not, I'll call somebody else up. Thank you. Welcome, Marcy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Marcy Eastham. I am Regional Government Affairs Manager for Hewlett-Packard based in Corvallis, and I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak with you today regarding electronic product recycling. Hewlett-Packard has been a major employer in Oregon for over 30 years, and we have been involved in electronic product recycling for nearly 20 years. We have a long track record. And I won't reiterate all of the issues around what e-waste or end-of-life electronics products, problems that are causing. But I would like to share that HP has a vision that we will offer recycling services anywhere in the world where we sell products. And we sell products in virtually every country in the world. We currently have a convenient way to recycle used IT hardware products from any manufacturer, and we do it in an environmentally sound way. Essentially, if Hewlett-Packard makes a product, we will take the same kind of product back, and we will recycle it. We have established strategic partnerships with leading recycling companies around the world, and we also have certification programs, internal certification programs in place to ensure that the e-waste that's received is managed responsibly. We do not export anything of that nature. Over a year ago, HP was a pioneer in developing convenient free recycling for laser jet supplies. We've expanded that to include inkjet supplies, and tens of millions of those cartridges have been recycled and thousands of tons of materials diverted from landfills. In the United States, we have two state-of-the-art recycling facilities, one located in Roseville, California, and the other just outside Nashville, Tennessee. We recycle in those two facilities 3.5 million pounds of electronic material per month. Last year, we recycled over 164 million pounds of electronic products, and to put that into kind of a visual, that's more than 600 jumbo jet airlines worth of product. We expect to exceed, we had set a goal several years ago to recycle 1 billion pounds of electronic products, and we expect to meet that goal this year. We're also actively engaged in shaping public policy on recycling and have consistently advocated an approach for recycling that leverages the expertise and innovation of the private sector in order to achieve the goals at the lowest possible cost. So based upon our experience, we believe that an approach that's flexible to manufacturers will result in an effective, fair, and low-cost solution. We believe that it's also the best approach for the environment. We want to be able to run our program. We want to be able to implement the responsibility that we already are demonstrating in a way that can drive environmental improvements through individual company design for environment programs. When an HP engineer sits down to begin designing a new electronic product, that end-of-life solution is designed at the very first step. So we always think about what we're putting into the product and how it's going to be dismantled and how it's going to be recycled. We believe there are three keys to a solid recycling approach, and I'm starting to sense a pattern here because it's very much like what we've heard earlier today. First is producer responsibility. We believe that we should be permitted to establish and run our own recycling programs or participate in a contractor program if a manufacturer opts to not run their own program. It gives opportunity to become better designers. It gives us an opportunity to think more about the environment. And it also, we also advocate this approach to, so all stakeholders will play a role in managing the proper end of life of electronic products. We also believe in a return share. At the very basic, the purpose of an electronic products recycling program is to get what's already out there out of the waste stream. The most reasonable and established way to do that is to count what's being returned, have a weight of that, and assign a return share to manufacturers based on that weight. Such a method also provides a solution to the question of orphan waste where no manufacturer exists any longer. Producers that do not run their own program would be charged a fee based on what is being returned to fund the contractor program. And the best thing about return share is it's measurable, it's auditable, and it's easy to implement. Finally, we do propose for a limited scope of product. The most challenging products to recycle are the ones we should be focusing on, and that's monitors and televisions. Keeping these out of the waste stream will limit their impact on the environment. HP's recycling program currently operates in more than 40 countries, regions, and territories. Plastics and metals recovered from products recycled by HP have been used in new HP products, such as scanners, as well as a range of other uses, including auto body parts, clothes hangers, plastic trays, fence posts, serving trays, and roof tiles. We believe that the most effective electronic product recycling programs are easy to implement, are free to consumers, and place responsibility on the producer to not only recycle their products, but to do a more environmentally thoughtful way of designing their products. And we hope that you agree. We do appreciate the committee's interest in HP's programs and perspectives. We look forward to working with you, Representative Dingfelder, and all members of the committee to develop a program that's effective and flexible for Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marcy. And colleagues, just to let you know, during the National Conference of State Legislators last summer, I had the ability, along with several other legislators, to tour the Hewlett-Packard recycling facility in Tennessee and actually have some information about that if folks are interested in seeing. We have a video also from that.
Yes, I actually have additional copies of that, Representative, if you'd like me to share those with the committee.
That would be great. Thank you. Jim.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Jim Craven, representing the American Electronics Association, Oregon Council. AEA is the nation's largest high-tech trade association. We have members throughout the country and 180 members here in Oregon. A couple quick comments. A lot of maybe what I was going to say has already been said, so I guess that's good, so I'm not going to be countering what's already been said. Clearly, as you heard from Pamela Bodie-Hine, we're not starting from scratch. And I think that's important to recognize. I mean, the baseline survey they did said 95% of Oregonians have reasonable access to such services. Are they as convenient as they should be? Probably not. Have we done as good a job educating people about what's currently in place? Perhaps not. But we're not starting from scratch. If we didn't have some infrastructure already in Oregon, there wouldn't be that truck out front collecting products because there would be no recycler to deal with them. But there is, and Earth Protection Services and Free Geek are key players in the existing infrastructure that we have, as well as some of the manufacturers have stepped up on their own. If you own a Dell computer product today and you're tired of it, Dell will come to your front porch and take it away for free, no cost to the consumer. Hewlett-Packard has programs where you can send material in, and it may cost a few dollars in postage, but they will give you a $50 credit on their website to buy additional product, again, making it no cost to consumers. So a lot of the large IT companies have stepped up and have programs in place. So really the decision for you and the decision for all of us in Oregon is to say we recognize that there is an infrastructure. It's growing every day. Programs didn't exist 2 to 4 years ago, now exist, are serving consumers in Oregon, is a decision whether you want to go another step to say we want to pass a comprehensive statewide program, because we don't think the existing market-based program will get us where we need to go fast enough. And that's the policy choice before you. I don't think there'll be anybody in this debate saying, it's not an issue, we think it's good to throw the stuff away in landfills. I mean, you're not going to hear that. You're not going to hear people say, it's not a challenge and it's not something that consumers want to be addressed. Really, we're talking about how the best way to get to that goal. If you choose the latter point, choose to say that this is an area of space that you want to legislate on a statewide basis, then I guess I'd ask you to consider three key points. The first you've heard about is the scope of products. Now, I know a lot of people, the advocates before me, testified that they'd like to throw in PDAs and printers and mice and all this range of products. But I would ask you to consider, this issue started in California where the issue was cathode ray tubes, TVs and TV monitors and their potential impact on the environment with lead and all those issues. When it got time to figure out the financing mechanism, they said, well, how are we going to clean up TVs by putting a tax on TVs since they're a rapidly dying product that is going to be out of the market within a year or two? So they included laptops. A couple years later, Washington legislated on this issue, and they went farther than that. They said, let's do TVs, computer monitors, laptops, and desktops. So Washington is just now starting to implement their law. They've done pretty much now is register a bunch of companies and collect a bunch of fees. They're into the hard part now, which is how do we actually make the program work. I would urge the committee to think of the wisdom of, at least to start, that we look at the Northwest products list. And in Washington, that's laptops, monitors, and desktops. A lot of companies around the world and in the United States are beginning to try to wrestle with the Washington law. Companies are registering that they, you know, intend to comply. They're trying to figure out the rules. They're trying to get through the process. To add, you know, a wholly different expansive list at this time in Oregon, just as you can probably imagine, creates a degree of difficulty. Just as Washington's going down where people are trying to figure out the rules, here comes Oregon with yet a whole new list to bring in new manufacturers with new products. I would think that would be disruptive. I mean, I know it would be disruptive. So that's an important policy choice as we have this debate. I think number two is the scope of product. You've heard talk about whether this should be available to large businesses, government, et cetera. I think it's important to note that most large entities, like this building who just bought a ton of Dell equipment, most large purchasers like that have access to what are called asset recovery programs from your vendor. That really has not been identified as the problem we're trying to address. And whether you're a government entity, you're still a large vendor, you're still going to have programs available from your manufacturer who sold you the stuff, and by and large, they're going to come take it away because they want to do that. They'd like you to buy new stuff. So let's be cautious about who the scope of the users of this program are for those good reasons, and focus on your constituents who have the stuff in their dungeons and attics and garages and are trying to find solutions at the local basis. And finally, third, I would urge you as you make decisions on this difficult task to listen very hard to the people who have to do the work. It's not easy to pass bills in this building, but passing bills is not the end goal. It's actually doing the work. And there are a lot of people in this room who will be part of that process, both manufacturers, recyclers, processors, local government. To listen to them over the next couple of weeks, to their concerns about if we're going to legislate at the statewide level, someone's going to have to go make it work. And it's going to be the people in this room. And I would just urge you to listen to their concerns because they're the people who have the expertise. So I think that wraps up my comments, Madam Chair, and we're more than willing to participate in whatever kind of next process or next step we have.
Great. Thanks. Thanks so much, Jim.
Oh, Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Could I just add one thing?
Quickly. You're taking away from Tom's time, so.
That's okay. There was a question about the export provision in the Washington law. What actually happened on that? The Washington governor has line item veto ability in policy bills, and governor, as I understand, Governor Christine Gregoire vetoed that provision that banned exports under legal advice about the inability of a single state to control inter-global commerce. I think that was the advice she got. So that's what happened. I mean, it was in the bill, and she actually struck it out because of that issue.
Great. Thank you for the clarification. Tom?
My name is Tom Gallagher. I represent the Electronics Coalition of Manufacturers, Philips, Panasonic, Sony, JVC, among other 20-some electronics companies. You've been listening to a lot of testimony. I'm going to be very short here. You have my written remarks in front of you. I wish a lot of these people in the back of the room would have been there when we were doing this bill last time. That was our bill then, but it had an advanced recycling fee in it. So what I'll say here is that a large part of the debate is going to be over the funding device, how you pay for it. And I would leave you with three other short phrases. There are perfect systems, there are workable systems, and there are efficient and effective systems. And I hope we work very hard to achieve at least an efficient and effective system before we're done. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions for the panel? Representative McPherson.
Madam Chair. I'll throw this out to the panel, and they can one or more can offer up a comment. We were told earlier that a really effective, responsible recycling program would cost about 20 to 28 cents a pound. And by my calculation, that's not very much for a typical computer that's maybe 20 or 30 pounds all totaled. You know, we're talking about less than $10. Is that correct? Is that, for example, what HP experiences in terms of the cost of complete recycling of all the material, or does anybody else have any perspective?
Madam Chair, Representative McPherson, Hewlett-Packard's, we have been able to drive down the cost of our recycling based on volume, for one thing, but also through efficiencies in our processes. And we feel that 20 cents is a reasonable amount to put on a recycling per pound basis.
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative McPherson, let me throw a couple other numbers at you because there are a whole bunch floating around. The different systems change the price of the recycling immensely. Right now what we're experiencing in Maine, which has a producer responsibility system, because of the way it's set up, the price of recycling has gone from 19 cents a pound to 33 cents a pound. In California, in contrast to that, where they've doubled the recycling rate to over 4 pounds per capita, the fee has remained fixed. So you'll hear a lot of information, a lot of it general. It really depends on the specific system you use and how efficient and effective it is. In computers, there's a lot of the pieces that can be that have value. In television sets, almost none of it has general recyclable value. So there's a different economics to each of the products. And as you get into some of the peripherals, it gets even less.
And just a comment is also it depends on the market of and the market prices, especially of the metals, change constantly. So I think that's also a big driver. Representative Cannon had a question.
Thanks. And my question is for Ms. Easton. I'm interested in probing the HP model just a little bit further. That 20 cents per pound, you only recover in the California case, or perhaps Maine, or we didn't hear much about that program, but perhaps Maine is paying this as well. Otherwise, HP is shouldering that, is taking that 20 cent per pound hit in order to do this recycling. Am I correct in that?
It is a cost center, that is correct.
Yeah. Can I just follow up? I'm just curious sort of how HP got to the point where it decided to invest in the recycling facilities and spend that 20 cents per pound or more. And I certainly appreciate HP for doing it, and I imagine that part of the answer is the desire to be an environmental steward. Were there other cost or marketing-based decisions that went into that?
Representative Zungfelder, Representative Cannon. There are a number of things that went into that decision. As I've said, we've been doing this for 20 years now. Our initial intent was to find a way to take care of the products that we had internally. that we wanted to be responsible with our own products and employees were casting off a monitor, we felt that we should be responsible for that and dismantle it and appropriately recycle it. That expanded as we became more environmentally aware of what these products were doing. We felt that it was necessary to offer it to our consumers as well. We have invested a great deal in this process, and it is principally from an environmental stewardship perspective. It does cost us money. We get a little bit back in the resale of some of the precious metals, but not a whole bunch. It was driven by the businesses and continues to be supported by the businesses as a reasonable investment for our overall corporate social responsibility.
Okay. Thank you. I think there's some other questions that committee members will follow up with you directly, because we have four more people that we'd like to hear from. So thank you very much. I appreciate all of you coming and sharing your testimony. We, as Mr. Craven said, we should hear from the people who actually have to do the work. So we're now going to ask some of the recyclers to come up. Greg Sampson from Earth Protection Services, who happened to have a truck parked out in front of the Capitol. Oso Martin, is Oso here with Free Geek? Does anyone know where Oso went? He left. Oh, okay. I wish I'd known, because I would have called him up. So we'll have Lisa Dotto from Oregon Business Association. I know Julie Brandis had to leave. And Mike Dewey, why don't you come up as well? So just make sure you say your name for the record. Thanks, Greg.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. Thank you for inviting me to speak here today. It's truly a pleasure and an honor. My name is Greg Sampson. I work for Earth Protection Services. I'm the Vice President of Electronics Recovery. We've got six locations around the U.S. However, we are a small company. Even though we have six locations, we employ less than 100 people. This last year, our Tigard facility recycled over 1.1 million pounds of electronics that we processed and recovered the raw materials from, and we didn't even scratch the surface of what all is out here in Oregon. In addition, I hold the position of Vice President of the International Association of Electronics Recyclers, the IER. It's a trade organization. I'm also an active member in the United Nations project called the STEP Initiative, which stands for Solving the E-Waste Problem on a Global Scale. There's approximately 40 players worldwide in this. HP is one, Dell, and that we're very proud to be part of that particular group. And then on the EPA, development of certification. It started out being best management practices, and kind of it's morphed. We've been involved with that for about since its inception about 18 months ago. And I was previous executive director of Students Recycle and Use Technology program here in the state that closed in 2003. To be a general contractor in the building trades, one must abide by established rules and regulations. If someone tapes a piece of cardboard on the side of their truck and says they're a general contractor, the public has a way of actually checking out the legitimacy of this business. As it stands right now in the state of Oregon, the public has no method of checking on if they're a good player or a bad player. So anybody that wants to put a piece of cardboard on the side of their truck, they're an electronics recycler. Unfortunately, a lot of these startup companies, or what we refer to as the fly-by-night, they do not abide by any regulations. A lot of them do things on the dark side, I guess is a nice way of putting it, and that reporting, they don't worry about insurance or anything like this. And Oregon is in need of legislation which would aid the public in choosing electronics recyclers and also level the playing field for the responsible players that are out there, such as Total Reclaim out of Seattle, Free Geek, and ourselves. Without the regulations, doing business is really kind of like the wild, wild west where anything goes. It truly is. It's really kind of settled down in the last few years, but the majority of the material is simply being put into containers being shipped to developing nations. Our company would make a lot higher profit margin if we did that. However, before we do business with any downstream vendor, we actually do the due diligence on it. They must pass a very stringent environmental audit, either by our corporate environmental manager or the owner of our company, before we will do business with them. The number of e-waste points, collection points in Oregon has skyrocketed to approximately 167 throughout the state. What happens to this material? How is it being handled? What is being reported? Where is it going? Again, we have no way of monitoring this. Proper recycling has a related cost, just as any other responsible business. I do encourage competition, a competition that operates by the same set of rules, such as insurance requirements, accountability, transparency, and responsibility. California has been talked about. We actually have a facility in Ontario. And prior to Senate Bill 20/50, they did less than 25,000 pounds of electronics recycling. This last year, they did 2.5 million pounds with the advanced recovery fee down there. And this year, they're expected to hit over 4 million. The collective states that have enacted legislation are raising the industry standards that aids in the protection of the public, the environment, and business itself. It is time for us to move from the Wild Wild West and basically I'm asking for legislation that you're working on to move forward. Let's keep this moving forward. Hopefully a third time's the charm. So I'm asking for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm going to actually ask Holly, I didn't see you back there, Sears, to come up because you'll be the last person and I want to make sure we fit you in there. Thank you. Lisa.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Lisa Adato, and I'm from the Oregon Business Association. And I have been before this committee previously describing the Oregon Business Association as a statewide association of a multitude of kinds of businesses who have an interest in the overall business climate of Oregon rather than in one specific industry. And so I guess my question or the question I'd like to answer today is, well, why do we care? Why would an overall business group be involved in this issue of e-waste? What's the business case? And we believe that ultimately it's in the best interest of Oregon companies to lead and participate in the concept of product stewardship. By doing so, Oregon companies will enhance their reputation, attract bright and qualified employees, and create new technologies that will keep Oregon at the forefront of this important area. So we're supporting, the OBA is supporting e-waste legislation. We think that's an important component of Oregon's business strategy of leading in sustainable practices. And I've talked about that before, that Oregon, through its business plan, has chosen sustainability as a key component. And people have said, well, what does that really mean? And let me give you three examples that have come to my attention just recently. One is that one of our new members, Keen Shoes, with a almost 60 employees, just moved to Oregon. And I was talking to their director, and one of the key reasons that they moved to Oregon is because of our leadership in sustainability. They felt that that was the way to attract the right kind of employees. They moved from the Bay Area. So we're actually having new companies come to Oregon specifically for that reason. A second example is that one of the things that the OBA does is we're a champion for a group of entrepreneurs that focuses on clean energy and sustainability. It's an angel network of entrepreneurs. And we hear from people all the time who are are actually wanting to start their companies here, and these are all kinds of things like fancier, better turbines. And I talked to somebody the other day, and or one of our presenters, if you press a button, you can improve your efficiency throughout your home. There's all kinds of great new products that people want to develop, and they want to be here in Oregon. And they want to be here in Oregon because Oregon has the reputation for being a state that supports sustainability. So these are real creative minds, real prospective businesses, and real jobs in Oregon. And my final example is we just did a competition with other states and cities around the world and attracted a major international conference called the that focuses on clusters and economic development. So we're going to have hundreds and hundreds of business executives from around the world that will come here to Oregon because of our reputation. And so what does that have to do with this legislation? Well, a lot of our reputation was built on our landmark kinds of legislation like the bottle bill. And so Oregon really has, probably outside of Oregon as much as inside or even more, a reputation that is driving economic development and driving a positive business climate within Oregon. So product stewardship is an inherent part of the sustainability that we find a key competitive advantage for Oregon. Secondly,
Lisa, we have I have two more people.
I need to stop.
Yeah,
okay.
So I need you to wrap up because we're going to run out of time.
All right. Well, the second thing is there's also a lot of on-the-ground jobs involved in product stewardship and recycling. So there's sort of the long-term vision and the short-term vision. And because of those things, we support this. I do want to emphasize, though, it should be done in a way that works for the people that are doing the manufacturing. So that point that was made by the last panel is absolutely critical. There's a lot already being done by the private sector. Don't ignore that and make sure we're simple and efficient and effective.
Great. Thank you so much.
Madam Chair, I'm going to exit left, ask Holly to come up. And when I come up, I'm not going to be offended if people leave getting close to the hour. So
okay,
if you don't,
Holly.
And then I'll come.
Thank you.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee and staff, thank you for this opportunity to testify before you today. For the record, my name is Holly Sears, and I'm the Governmental Affairs Director for the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association. Much of what I covered today, or what I'm going to cover today, has already been covered, so I'll try to be brief. As you may already know, ORA, Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association, is the statewide trade association representing private solid waste management companies in Oregon. ORA members collect and process most of Oregon's residential and commercial garbage and recyclables, as well as operate material recovery facilities and many of Oregon's municipal solid waste transfer stations and landfills. ORA and its members have participated in e-waste recycling discussions for several years. Our concerns have been consistent throughout those discussions, and they center on two topics. The first is education. We want to provide our customers with accurate, up-to-date information about how electronic waste can be recycled, if possible, in their communities. The second is regulation of those who process the e-waste delivered for recovery. We want to assure ourselves and our customers that the e-waste will be properly reused and recycled, and what is left over will be properly disposed of and will not become an environmental problem in our communities or in other communities or even in other countries. I'd like to expand briefly on both of these topics, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about what some of our members are currently doing around the state. First, when it comes to education, we are often called the call of last resort for our customers. It can be hard for a customer to believe that the computer he or she paid over $1,000 for 5 years ago is worth practically nothing. Also, there are concerns about identity theft, and some may wonder even if it's legal for them to throw away their electronics in the garbage. So when they call, we want to have the answers. Our first choice is to direct them to a reuse or recycling opportunity, if there is one available in the area, and to educate them about the programs available. Our final option is to let our residential customers know that it is legal for them to throw away e-waste in the garbage can and that our landfills are designed to protect the environment and regulated by DEQ to ensure that they meet the requirements of their operating permits.
In addition to being the call of last resort, ORA members are regularly in touch with their customers, providing recycling information, and they could serve as conduits for targeted education about e-waste recovery programs in their communities as part of ongoing education efforts. We believe in educating people about their options, so we'd appreciate having the tools available to do so. Secondly, ORA members are concerned about what happens to e-waste after it is collected. I want to emphasize that there are many reputable e-waste recycling businesses, even represented here today, such as Total Reclaim and Earth Protection Services, but they are not the ones that make the headlines. Most people who have been involved in e-waste recycling discussions in the past are probably aware of the Basel Action Network and its reports on e-waste exported to foreign countries and their videos shot in China in late 2001 and Nigeria in 2005. ORA members do not want to have a part in collecting e-waste that could be shipped overseas as some part of a sham. ORA members also do not want to be associated with local processors who do not have the experience, financial backing, and proven track record of appropriately dealing with e-waste. Not only do ORA members feel their reputations are on the line, they are also aware that if they deliver e-waste to a processor who is not a valid recycler or one who does not dispose of what remains as the law requires, all of a sudden it is not an e-waste recycling facility, but rather a hazardous waste site. And if a company delivers e-waste to what becomes a hazardous waste site, it can be subject to full liability for the cleanup of that site pursuant to federal Superfund law. This is referred to as CERCLA liability. For these reasons, ORA members believe one of the most important acts the legislature can take in encouraging more e-waste recycling programs is to have the processors of e-waste submit to DEQ regulations of their facilities. The DEQ has the knowledge and capability to issue permits for such facilities, just as it issues permits for landfills and other solid waste disposal facilities. For example, a permit might cover operating plans, financial assurance in the event such a facility were to close, what to do in the event of unexpected spills, and fire prevention, and how to reduce toxic fumes in the event of a fire. This type of oversight will provide environmental protection to communities with e-waste processors, as well as economic protection to companies delivering e-waste. Undoubtedly, there are additional actions the legislature can take to encourage more e-waste programs, and I'm sure the work group being formed to discuss e-waste bills will have an opportunity to consider those ideas. In the meantime, there are ORA members that are providing e-waste recycling opportunities in their communities, usually working in partnership with their local city or county. I have not been able to survey the entire ORA membership, but I can tell you that ORA has member companies in Newport and Lincoln City that offer drop-off recycling opportunities for e-waste. Yamhill County and much of the North Coast offers electronics recycling at all transfer stations, and Bend, which offers e-waste recycling at their local landfill, as you stated earlier. These are just a few examples of some of the opportunities currently available outside the Portland metro area, where there are numerous opportunities, and outside the Willamette Valley, where Marion County and Lane County, among others, have e-waste recycling. In closing, ORA and its members look forward to more discussions about how e-waste programs can be encouraged in Oregon communities. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much. Vice Chair Burley has a quick question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this, I really would appreciate a 30-second answer to this, if possible, because I've got a 3 o'clock committee meeting to get to. But how do we make this work on the east side of the mountains? We've got very low density of people, very low volume of stuff that needs to be recycled, very great distances to travel. How do we make it work over there?
One way I see it working, she mentioned the transfer stations.
Mike.
Oh,
speaking
sorry.
To Mike. So who's here?
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee
Your
members.
Your name, Greg, for people listening.
Oh my, Greg Sampson, Earth Protection Services, sorry. One way I see this working is utilizing transfer stations that are already there. We've been working with Lane County for almost 3 years with their e-waste program, and it's been very successful because it does allow the public to drop off their e-waste at a place that they know it's going to be taken care of in an appropriate manner. And that... Again, we don't have to reinvent the wheel, like someone said. It's already there, and then these transfer stations can contract with reliable recyclers to make sure that the material is being processed in an appropriate manner.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you, ma'am.
And I'm sorry, Mike, that you had to yield your time, but we are out of time. Okay. So with that, committee members, now that there's all two of us here, we are going to be forming a work group because we have several different versions of legislation that are floating out there, including a committee bill and a bill that Representative Bruin and I have sponsored, and there's a Senate bill. So I have asked Representative Cannon, as one of our newer members, if he would be so kind as to head up a work group for the e-waste, and that would be staffed by Kat McGinnis. And the goal of this work group is over the next few weeks to try to work out some of the issues that we've heard raised here. And I would like to ask if there's anybody that would like to be on the work group, please make sure and contact Kat if you can do that today or tomorrow, because we'd like to start that up next week. So with that, I will close the informational hearing on e-waste and close the public hearing or the public meeting on energy and environment.